Silverlight 2 is brand new. It's powerful, and we're just starting to figure it out. But it's so powerful that there are a lot of ways to do things wrong, and it's not always obvious how to do things right. Today, we present part 1 of an interview with Jesse Liberty of Microsoft. He shows us the pitfalls, he shows us the good practices, he shows us the way that great Silverlight applications will be written. Coming up on the Sparkling Client Podcast.
Hello, I'm Eric Mork.
And I'm Monica Mork. Welcome to the Sparkling Client Podcast. Sparkling Client is a podcast about Silverlight and other web client technologies. It's meant for developers and designers who are interested in making the next generation of great-looking web applications. Here's how it works. You give us 15 minutes of your time, and we give you the tools to build amazing web clients. For more information and show notes, see sparklingclient.com. Also, please consider leaving us feedback at the site. We're always looking for ways to make the show better. Warning, we're talking about beta software. Some details may change by the time this software is released. This week, we present part 1 of an interview with Jesse Liberty of Microsoft. Eric, who is Jesse?
Well, he is perhaps the world's premier Silverlight geek, and that's in fact how he titles himself. Well, the Silverlight geek part. He doesn't say premier. That's the part I added. He works for Microsoft. He helps run the Silverlight.net site, and he was kind enough to sit down with me at the Mix conference, so you're going to hear some background noise in the interview. He gave us such an information-dense interview that we had to break it up over 2 shows, so we'll give you part 1 today.
So what are we going to cover in part 1?
Well, he talks about a lot of good stuff, including resources to get you started. He talks about Silverlight.net resources, sort of a guide there. He talks about Silverlight versus other technologies, and then he also gives some great guidance as to when we might do stuff declaratively and when we might do it more imperatively, and some good pointers and rules of thumb.
Sounds good. Let's get started.
And I would like to welcome Jesse Liberty to the Sparkling Client Podcast. Jesse, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm very, very pleased to be here.
And we're very glad to have you. Maybe you could give us your official title at Microsoft, if you don't mind.
My official title is Senior Program Manager in the Silverlight Development Division. I believe that's the official title. My working title is Silverlight Geek, which is particularly good because it really cleaves the world in 2. People who like that title are, in fact, the people who I need to be talking to.
Nice. Now, so what do you typically do? What do you work on for Microsoft?
I wish I had a short answer for that. Okay. My job is to build a community for developers and to help developers who want to learn or to use Silverlight. So typical, well, I'm not sure I have a typical day. I create how do I videos, we call them, which focus on how do I accomplish this particular task in Silverlight. These days, I'm working exclusively on Silverlight 2. And I should say, Silverlight 1 is our release product. And we're in no way neglecting Silverlight 1. There are lots of folks who are building very much similar things for Silverlight 1. My personal focus at the moment, at least for now, is on Silverlight 2, which we have just gone into beta with. So I'll build videos, and they'll run between 10 and 30 minutes, but typically about 20 minutes. And they're typically screencasts, so you'll watch as I actually build an application and explain how to do that. That'll be one chunk of what I do.
To view these videos, go to shrinkster.com/WK3.
I'm also building what we're calling the Silverlight 2 tutorials, and they are available in HTML and PDF, but they are about 4,000 or 5,000 word explanations of major areas of Silverlight 2 written for .NET programmers that do not assume that you know any Silverlight, but explain areas of Silverlight in good detail. And they are tutorials. They tell the story of Silverlight for programmers who want to learn Silverlight. So that's a second piece.
To find the tutorials, go to shrinkster.com/WK4.
A third piece of what I do is that I create what are called tips of the day. Mm-hmm. And they can range from fairly short and pointing out resources to a deeper explanation of what would be in the tutorial. I also add blog posts that can be anything from news to clarifications, explanations, and so on.
Jesse's blog can be found at shrinkster.com/WK5. And the tip of the day has been moved to the Silverlight Micro blog, which is kind of cool. It's on a Twitter feed, and it's at shrinkster.com/WK6.
Another piece of what I do is about once a month I do a webcast, which is a live presentation of it's sort of a deep dive on one particular area. I'll also go to presentations. We're here at Mix, and I'll go to various presentations. I'm going to be at VS Live in San Francisco and VS Live in Orlando talking about Silverlight. And finally, Microsoft has made it part of my job to do what I have been doing for the past 8 or 9 years, which is to write books. So we just released the fifth edition of Programming C# for O'Reilly. That's out, and we're very excited about that.
Congratulations.
And thank you very much. And we're finishing up Programming .NET 3.5, which we hope to release very soon. And we're just starting Programming Silverlight, which we hope will be released when Silverlight 2 is officially released. So that's very exciting as well.
Yeah, and that's one area we don't have any books to point to right now, and that's sort of a problem. It'll be nice once the books start to hit the shelves.
They can't see this book, right? Very nice cover.
It is. I can attest to that. So switching gears a bit here, at Mix, we've heard of a lot of exciting stuff. And now I'm going to be talking almost exclusively about Silverlight, so fair warning here.
That's quite all right with me.
So for the folks at home who aren't here, obviously, and maybe they don't have the time to watch the videos and watch the keynote, etc., what's sort of the take-home message in terms of Silverlight from this conference?
Oh, I think the take-home message from Mix is that we've released a lot of exciting products. In terms of Silverlight, it's that we have released the really long-anticipated Silverlight Beta 1, Silverlight 2 Beta 1. And what that means is that Silverlight has greatly expanded its capabilities. And the key aspects of that are that we now include a subset of the CLR, and what that means is that you can do a great deal more with Silverlight a great deal more easily. So we are currently releasing about 24 already created controls, and by that I mean that you can easily build a form for user input with all the controls you would expect, such as a text box and a radio button, and then more advanced controls like sliders and calendars and so on. And we're going to be adding many more controls. We also have greatly enhanced our layout controls to make it easy to create forms. So it's much more like the experience of building a Windows page or a web page in ASP.NET or WPF, very much a subset of building WPF. We use XAML, and I'm hoping that the folks at home are .NET programmers, or all these initials would be quite confusing. But I think, takeaway is that this is Silverlight fitting into the .NET programmer's experience and the .NET programmer's toolkit. Everything fits in with the way we do the rest of .NET programming. It's fully integrated into Visual Studio. It's the same XAML that's used in WPF. It's the same XAML that's used in Workflow. However, what you're building are rich internet applications that run in the browser cross-platform. That means they run on Windows, they run on the Mac, very soon they run on Linux. I actually watched a demonstration where it was being served on Apache, being running on a Mac, and being debugged on Windows. It's really kind of cool.
I like this openness. I think it's good for the community, and I think ultimately it's going to be good for the platform.
But it goes well beyond controls. We're talking about data binding and a great deal of network support, very, very extensive enhancement to Silverlight that we will be spending a great deal of time and a great deal of resources providing developers with what they need to fully understand just how large Silverlight 2 is and how extensive an upgrade and an enhancement this really is. And we are in Beta 1, but we do have a Go Live license, and we will be moving forward with Silverlight 2 all the way through to adding more features and getting ready to release time, which we're calling release to web. We're not actually going to be creating disks. We're going to say, okay, this is it. It's fully supported. It's fully released. At that point, it will be a released product.
Sort of born onto the web.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Let's talk about the benefits of Silverlight. So for people who are moving from Flash, there are a lot of Flash people out there right now who were working on Flash or are or have Flash sites. So now they're looking at, do we continue with Flash or do we move to Silverlight? What are the sorts of things that those people should be thinking about in terms of this decision?
You know, for a lot of folks, this is a wonderful softball question that they could knock right out of the park. And I have to say and confess that I am working really, really hard at not trying to convince anyone that they ought to pick Silverlight over anything else. I think that there are a lot of good products out there and that none of them is the devil incarnate, nor is Silverlight the clear answer to every possible problem. I think Silverlight has a great deal to offer. And certainly if you're a .NET programmer and you're looking at the spectrum of what can I build, and you look at ASP.NET and ASP.NET with AJAX and WPF, Silverlight slots in beautifully and fits in with what you know. Now, if you're looking at other technologies and you're then looking at Silverlight, there's no question that Silverlight has some phenomenal things to offer. It brings with it all of the work that Microsoft has done on security, and it brings with it Visual Studio, which must be one of the great development tools available, and it brings with it all that Microsoft has learned over the years and all that Microsoft has in terms of its R&D budget and so forth. But I'm frankly not in the business of convincing folks that they want to use Silverlight. I mean, there are a lot of people who can do that quite well. My job is, once a developer has decided that he or she does want to use Silverlight, my job is to enable that, to foster that, to be available to provide the information to make that easy. And in fact, it turns out that with Silverlight 2, programming Silverlight applications is, in fact, a pretty straightforward task in terms of actually getting the work done once you get your head around a couple fundamental concepts such as declarative programming and what it is you're trying to accomplish and how to do that efficiently and so forth. And I'm not saying that this is trivial, but it is very, very manageable task for any programmer.
So let's talk about actually programming with Silverlight. I think that there may be some dangers here because it's so new and so powerful. One might be, and I want to get your take on this, is that now we have this declarative markup, and there's been this sort of push towards declarative languages at Microsoft, I think. Well, starting with ASP.NET AJAX and the declarative format you can use there. But now we have all this stuff in XAML, and one of the tricks might be, once we start having too much, and so we have a choice. Some stuff can go in XAML. There's a subset of stuff that can go into XAML, or it could go into more imperative sorts of programming paradigms, like in the actually in the code or the code behind file. Are we maybe going to run into a situation where we start to hit the bad parts of declarative programming, where it's difficult to, say, debug a declarative language?
I don't think you are, and I'll tell you why. I don't think that this is actually going to be difficult, nor do I think it's going to be difficult to know which to use. Because the advantage is, and by the way, I will say just as an aside that the serious language folks who are listening are going to carp at our using declarative as the distinction between XAML and runtime.
That's right. They can't see my hand waving when I say declarative.
Right. Exactly. And so we should say, just for the record, that one can do declarative languages, declarative programming in C#, but we're going to set that aside. We're going to use declarative in the way an awful lot of programmers do, and it's extremely common to mean as synonymous with at design time as opposed to at runtime. And so the declarative programming is the XAML programming, and the dynamic programming is the code behind C# programming. Although, remember that you can, of course, in Silverlight 2, do your code behind in any in virtually any language. Is a little extreme, but in many languages, including scripted languages. But let's assume for the moment that you're working in XAML and one of the managed code languages, and let's assume for the moment it's C#. Okay. First of all, it is worth mentioning that anything that you can do in XAML, you can do in C#. So any object that you can create in XAML, you can also create dynamically at runtime. So then the question becomes, well, why don't I just do it all at runtime? And there's good reason to do things in XAML. And probably one of the most compelling is that XAML is highly toolable. And by that we mean that you can take that XAML and you can bring it into Visual Studio and you can bring it into the expression tools extremely easily. And the files that Expression Blend works with are the exact same project files and XAML files that Visual Studio works in. So there's no exporting and importing. They're the identical files, and you can move freely back and forth between them. That's very, very, very powerful. And it makes for highly scalable and maintainable code. And it makes for projects that are easily divided and then worked on and shared back together between designers and developers. And there's a model that is shown in the Firestarter tutorials. And again, you can get to them through the Silverlight.net site. And one of my blog entries points to them, and they're pretty easy to find, in which Arturo, who will kill me for blocking his last name at the moment, shows a cycle where there is wire sketch, what they call
wireframing.
Thank you. Of between the designers and the developers of what they're going to build, then they go off and work separately, and then they come together to reunite. There's no impedance mismatch between what the designers are doing and what the developers are doing because they're working in the same language. They're working in XAML together. And it's that declarative language lends itself to the same tools. So having that declarative language has enormous benefits. And we've seen that in the past with HTML, but HTML is an extremely limited language that is not at all extensible. XAML has some tremendous advantages in terms of the power of XAML, and it's based entirely on industry standards, and it's based entirely on XML, and it's a highly extensible language. It's a highly toolable language, highly safe language, so it has a lot of advantages. Now, when, therefore, do you use a dynamic instantiation of those objects? Well, there are times that you can't know at design time which object you want to create. And for example, let's say that in your XAML, you're going to create, let's take a fairly simple example, that you're going to create some controls on a form. Well, if your form is in fact data-driven, and what your plan is to have the customer or the user interact with your application, and then depending on their interaction, go to a database and pull out from the database which controls to show them next. Well, clearly you cannot do that at design time. You're going to have to do that at runtime, right. And you can. There's no reason that what you can't do is create some kind of container, a canvas, or a more likely a grid, and a grid control, and then at runtime instantiate up the controls that you want, set their properties in C#, and add them to the children object of that grid at whatever location you want, setting whatever style properties you want at runtime. In fact, pulling from first-class style objects in Silverlight 2 so that they're reusable, much like CSS styles, and applying them to those objects and adding them right into the grid, and all of that works just fine. So you can do things declaratively, you can do them programmatically, and I don't think that's ought to be, in the long run, based on, frankly, on your initial comfort level, nor on fear of scalability. I think they both scale, and it's pretty easy to get comfortable. I think it's really going to be based on what can you know at design time, and what do you need to decide at runtime.
That's a good line. we can think about it in terms of what do we know now and what are we going to know at runtime and sort of draw that line there. I like that. That's a good rule of thumb to follow.
I see what you meant, Eric. That declarative versus imperative rule of thumb is useful. Something I hadn't really thought about. Next week, we'll present more of our interview with Jesse. Eric and I work for Silver Bay Labs, the company Eric founded. If you want to know more about what we do, see silverbaylabs.org. The music for today's show is used with permissions and is from teamyacht.com and magnatune.com. See the show notes for more information. Did you want me to come on?